I'm Critter.
I'm Jace.
And we should be working.
God damn it. It's one, two, say it.
All right. I'm Critter.
I'm Jace.
And we should be working.
I fucking hate you so much.
Hang on a second. Let me mess with some dials.
No. You're good. You're good. It's too fucking late,
Jace.
Hey,
I'm messing
with
the dials.
I was listening to music, pal, and I didn't realize I had my volume down. I'm sorry. It's my bad.
Hey, how's that? No, but look at my little wave file. It's like tiny compared to yours, you guys.
I think that's a Zencaster weird thing, because you sound as loud as Jace. Mine's always really? Tiny, too.
Yeah, and I'm always quieter. Oh my God, that sounded way worse. But
yeah, I cranked it all the way up for a second. I'm sorry, let's not do that.
No, yeah, I'm always quieter than Critter, and then he has to go back and edit for whatever reason. So
yeah, we're pros here. We get different tracks, edit them, you know.
Yeah, in the time that I briefly had a podcast, I used Zencaster, and pro was definitely the word I would use for like just the number of episodes where we'd get to the end and be like, so that didn't record. What if we started over?
Tell me about your podcast. I want to hear about this.
Oh, it was a comedy podcast. It was an improvised podcast. My old improv theater in Washington, D.C., WIT, it's Washington Improv Theater. They do a show every 4 years called POTUS Among Us, and it's an election-themed show. And so in the past, we would do, you know, every Friday and Saturday night, you get your run of candidates. The audience would, like, write campaign platforms, basically, on a slip of paper. You draw them out of a hat. Everybody gives their like made up 30-second stump speech. Audience votes for two candidates, and then we basically have a race. And we make fun of the press, we make fun of voters, we make fun of politics, the whole thing. So in 2020, they had to do it online. And they were like, we are open to any kind of participation. We don't know what the show is going to look like. So I raised my hand to do a podcast, and some other guy that I knew, this guy Patrick, or that I didn't know at the time, raised his hand to do a podcast. And I was like, cool, you sound like you have an idea. Let's do your thing. And we hosted this podcast that was basically like, are you familiar with Pod Save America?
No, I've heard of it.
It's these, I wasn't a listener. I'm not a listener. It's these former Obama staffers who talk politics. So we were former staffers for made up president Kerry O'Connor. And we would just have these insane candidates on our show and we would improvise and they would talk about their insane platforms. And it was a lot of fun.
That sounds hilarious. So this is probably a good time to segue into the elevator pitch for Jordan, because I have a bunch of follow-up questions. So hit us with what's your elevator pitch for who Jordan is?
Oh, I should have written this down.
No, you shouldn't have.
Okay. Well, I'll go with what I've been putting on my brand new website, which is nowadays. Jordan is a coach who helps. Oh, come on.
He was just
what's the website? I know, but he said his website and then drop. You got to promote yourself.
All right, I'm still new at this. The website is jordanhirschcoaching.com, and that's Hirsch, H-I-R-S-C-H.
Called foreshadowing.
I'm sure you'll find it in the show notes. So by day, I'm the director of training and facilitation at Phase 2, which is a new role for me.
A brand new title, isn't it?
Brand new title, brand new role.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you. That is the culmination of a years-long campaign to get to spend most of my time doing stuff I like to do and I'm good at. So that was cool. And then by night and on the weekends, I am a coach who helps people get unstuck. And I take kind of an improvisational approach to that. And I can explain what that means in a little bit. But basically, I work with people who are maybe stuck at a job that you hate and you don't know what to do next. Or you know that you've got some ideas for kind of these next steps, but you don't know how to take them. Or you just don't feel like you have permission to go out and try something new. Or you're afraid to fail because you don't know what's on the other side of an experiment. And I help guide people through that because I've been through it and it sucks to be on the first half of that, but it's really fun to be on the other side when you come out and you like have made a bunch of changes in your life and you're feeling good about stuff.
Is this your end game? Like, do you ideally want to end up doing this full time? And that's the dream.
That would be a long-term dream. Yeah. Is maybe some version of life where I have a lot of coaching clients. I'm maybe doing some like corporate trainings and facilitation work. Maybe even, you know, go part-time at my role at Phase 2, something I've talked about there. I don't know. That's off in the distance, I think, for now. For now, it's coaching lets me use a skill set that I've been using at work for many years as a manager, but that I didn't really know that I was coaching. Looking back, though, on like various places I've described myself over the years, my resume, feedback people have given me, this word coach comes up over and over and over and over and over again. And yet when I was actually working with a coach earlier this year, to try to figure out what was next for me professionally. She was like, you know, the work you're describing that you want to do, do you realize that's, you're describing coaching? I was like, no, I'm not. That's fucking stupid. Coaching is dumb. And I had to kind of sit with it for a while to realize like, oh, wait, maybe that is something I could do.
So is that how you got into it? Like you realized that you were doing it and just, it was intentional. Realized, you didn't just fall into it by accident.
Did not fall into it by accident. I've taken a few trainings over the years where coaching has come up as part of it. I've been trained in facilitation work. I took like an innovation leadership accelerator program with a fabulous guy named Daniel Stillman, who I'd recommend to the whole wide world. And in his class, we read a book called The Coaching Habit. And Critter, I feel like you've written about this book, right?
I've written about it. And I tried to do an experiment by coaching Jace, sort of, based on the book on the podcast, and it went horribly.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool.
Yeah, did we end up cutting that?
We cut, well, there were two separate sessions, and we cut the first one was when I was like asking about why you got a puppy, and it was just super awkward and weird.
It was real bad,
Why did you get a puppy though, Jess?
Companionship overall. Mm-hmm. I mean, and responsibility. So, I mean, needed something to take care of and
that's cool.
Focusing on. Yeah.
All right. So here's a little coach tip that I've learned in the training I've taken so far. Why questions tend to make people very defensive as opposed to, Jace, what has a puppy brought to your life?
Man, shut up.
Right? So you see, it works. So anyway, yeah. So I read that book and that book changed it. It really resonated with me. And I was like, oh, this is like my management style, but I wouldn't have thought of it as coaching. I thought of it as, I don't really know like the correct way to manage. So I manage people by asking a lot of questions and offering very little by way of advice, but that's probably bullshit. Cause like, I don't know, like a real manager probably tells people what to do, but I don't know what they're supposed to do. So instead I asked them like, well, what do you want to be doing? Let's talk about that. How can we get more of that into your life? And then when I was working with my own coach, trying to figure out what was next for me kind of professionally, whether at phase two or outside of phase two, I mean, I'd been there for 8 years. I was kind of tired of being a digital strategist. And I wanted to see what was next for me. And I had ideas about facilitation work. I had ideas about how much I love to manage. I was using manage, I think, in place of the word coach for a lot of things. And that's when my coach was like, yeah, you know, a lot of what you're talking about is coaching. And that truly was my response. I was like, no, I'm not. You're terrible at this. But she was right. She was absolutely right. I wouldn't have even ever worked with a coach. I thought coaching was like new age crystals and sage, you know, burning, like just total nonsense bullshit. And I was complaining to my wife one day yet again. I'm like, oh, I want to do something different, but I don't know what it is. And my beautiful, talented wife, Amanda, turned to me and she's like, honey, here are some choices. You can shut the fuck up about this and never talk to me about it again. really tired of hearing this same broken record. Or you can do what I've been telling you to do for months and just go hire a coach and like talk to someone about it. I was like, okay, I guess I'll try that. And
so
it changed a lot of things for me.
Where's the line between coach and therapist?
That's a great question. For all your listeners, I'm going to hold up my hands like this to show you this is not the
Venn diagram.
This is a Venn diagram. You know what? I'm going to put my hands back down. We'll edit that out. So the way they talk about it in coach training is therapy is primarily concerned with healing wounds from the past, figuring out kind of what are some like formative things that happened that created the patterns that you may find yourself stuck in today or things that you want to change today. And it's about kind of going back over that ground and like healing from that stuff. Coaching acknowledges that those things are there, but it's much more forward focused. Coaching is all about, what do you really want next? What are you willing to do to get it? And then let me be your accountability buddy to help you make sure you're actually doing these things. Does that make sense?
How skeptical were you when you first started in your coaching sessions?
Like, as a coachee?
Yeah, like how long did it take you to finally like kind of give into the process and trust what was happening? Like, or was there like a certain moment or certain like realization?
Yeah, my coach was very good. And it helped that I had found her through, my wife had put out feelers to her coach and been like, here's what my husband is like. And she kind of described me. And she's like, I need someone who can handle, who's like irreverent, who will use humor, someone who can understand like the ADD mind, and ideally someone who gets the world of improv. And so I get this email from this woman out in California, Sabrina the Business Witch is her website. You should look her up. She's amazing. Sabrina Pratt. And she was basically, she runs an improv theater out in California and she's very funny. And she almost immediately like got on the same wavelength with me. And we had this first just kind of free intro call. And at the end of it, I hung up the phone and I was like, oh, maybe I can make changes in my life that would benefit me. Like, maybe I do have permission to act on my own behalf. That's crazy. Okay, I don't have to do the same thing tomorrow that I did yesterday. That's weird. And a lot of coaching is things where when you say these things to people and they're like, oh my God, it's so obvious when you say it.
Right.
I'm like, yeah, I'm reflecting back things that you said to me. And it makes me think of advice that I give improvisers when I teach and coach improv. You know, I'll give someone a note from a scene and they're like, oh, of course, it's so obvious. I'm like, well, yeah, keep in mind, when you're on stage, you have the worst seat in the house. You can't see the show. I've got a great view here. I can see everything.
Right.
So sometimes just having that sounding board, having someone just reflect back to you, like literally what you're saying, but it's coming from an external source. So your brain is like, wait, maybe you should listen to this. It's not coming
from a trusted source.
Yeah. Plus a source that, especially once I started paying for it, like knowing that I was investing in it made me take the process very seriously.
Right.
You know, like I was willing to, when I said, okay, I'll do this thing by next week, I did it because I knew A, I'm paying for it. Like,
it's
no
like
point.
A college course almost.
Right? Yeah, like, no. Well, yeah, yeah. I didn't really go to my college courses, but...
well, I mean, you're like accountable for... That, so. You're, okay, sorry.
Yes, my exactly. Bad. Exactly. But yeah, so I'm putting my own money on the line and I have to talk to her again next week. And she's going to say like, hey, did you send that email we talked about? And if I say no, we're going to have to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it again. We already talked about it.
Right.
I can already tell the end result of this podcast is going to be that I'm going to have to get a coach. So if you know of anything, you know, let me know.
Okay. So Jordan Hirsch coaching.com. And I'll just say, anybody can get a free hour session with me right now. No strings attached, totally complimentary. You do not have to sign up for anything at the end. And it's just a conversation.
Yeah. Or just invite them on your podcast and then that's another free hour right there.
We'll do some free live coaching right now.
So I want to know, like, what's of all the stuff you mentioned, the accountability and the permission, you know, things like that, like what kind of stands out to you as a coachee as being the most valuable aspect of it?
Ooh, accountability. I'll make myself 1,000 to-do lists. I'll be like, I'm going to reach out to this person. I'm going to network with this person. I'm going to make a website. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do all these things. And then when that doesn't work in the to-do list, I'll put them on the calendar. Like, okay, well, now I've got calendar events that'll remind me to do these things. Yeah. And then when that doesn't work, I'm like, oh, guess what? These events have an edit button, and I'm just going to change that month to next month. Look at that, problem solved! As opposed to having a person that I check in with every week who I have to, like, actually say to, no, I didn't do my homework. So having that accountability for me was the most important part.
And paying for it and being like, I'm paying for this fuck up that I just did.
Exactly. Like, I'm paying a lot of money to not do the work.
Right.
That's the thing that they don't tell you about coaching. I'm going to reveal a huge secret right now. The sessions are not where the work happens. Sessions are like fun time. The work, the work has to happen afterwards.
Well, it's like the gym subscriptions, right? It's just fat tax if you don't use it.
Fat tax. I saw a tweet the other day where this woman was like, I think my bank account has used my gym membership more than I have. It's getting a bigger account than I have.
That's so great.
So is it and this is where it starts to become a coaching session for me. But I'm wondering, like, for you, as you became a coach, did you ever feel like I'm not worth the money? That, like, was there imposter syndrome there? Like, making sure they get the value out of it and worrying about that?
Absolutely. I said to my coach, so she dropped this bomb on me of like, maybe you're a coach. And I was like, maybe you should shut up. But when I finally got over it and I actually started, like, went to some online trainings, read a couple books, and I set up a few practice sessions with people. I'll coach you for a half hour, you coach me for a half hour, like other aspiring coaches kind of thing. And I said to my coach, I'm super nervous about this first one because I don't want to like fuck someone's brain up. Like, you're basically letting me do verbal brain surgery on you. And she was like, okay, first of all, let's take it down a step. If you're going out there saying like, hey, I'm a therapist, come to me with your deep-seated problems, like that might be, you might do some damage there. There's really very little damage you can do as a coach. So I got over that very quickly, I would say. But yeah, I was definitely nervous about it. As for being like nervous about being worth it, it was a little while before I got up the nerve to actually ask for money for this. And I haven't had a side hustle in, God, I don't know, 8 or 9 years at this point. I mean, it's been a while. It's been a very long time. So I was nervous about that aspect. I don't really like being an entrepreneur or like running a business. But I went to a session, an online session from this guy who's kind of like a coaching guru. And he talked about what ground to cover in this initial call with someone. And then basically we got to the end. He was like, now here's the hard part. At the end, it's like, you have to get the courage up to say, hey, I think this is going really well. What do you think? And if they say, I also think it's going really well, you have to say, like, basically, would you like to pay me to do more of this? And that is a really hard thing to do. And the first time I did it, I tried it on a friend and I said my price and he was like, oh. And I was like, oh, or half of that. He's like, dude, what are you doing? Don't do that. Don't cut your price in half. It's like, practice that. He made me practice on him again. So I'd recommend, you know, if you're out there starting a new hustle, like try it out on a few friends first. Try that.
You gotta build the callus.
Saying out loud. You have to build a callus. You have to be able to ask for money with a straight face. And that has taken me a while to do. But now I've gotten a few proof points. I've got a few paying clients. I've got a few people who heard my price and was like, no, thank you. This is great, but you know, not for me. But I'm learning, like, I don't know, so far three or four people have paid for this. And that has given me a massive boost of confidence. But of course, every time that I talk to someone and they're like, no, thank you. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm doomed. I should probably just take that website back down and never do this again.
When you cross the line from, you know, working with your friends and stuff and feeling like you're still kind of getting your bearings to officially asking strangers to pay you to do this, how did you do it? Like, just tactically, you know, what does that look like? Did you post on LinkedIn? Did you market yourself in any way?
So my very first client, my first paying client, was not a stranger. She was an old friend of a friend that we hadn't seen in probably 10 years since we used to live in Washington, D.C., my wife and I. For the listeners, I just gestured over my shoulder to indicate where D.C. is.
To King Kong?
Oh, yeah, that's where D.C.
It's in that. It's right behind that poster. Yeah. And I had started writing on LinkedIn about how I was getting into coaching. And
I remember these posts.
Yes. And this was a weird time for me because usually when I would write something on LinkedIn, I would feel like, oh, I should probably write about something. You know, I'll write about like maybe improv because I like improv, or maybe I'll write about work, you know, my digital strategy work. But I wasn't like super enthused about it. The coaching posts were not me trying to get clients. The coaching posts were actually just me being like, I don't know where else to talk about this, but I'm excited about it. So I'm just gonna like nerd out for a minute. I heard some quote. I think it was the quote. It was a quote about improv that I had heard on a podcast. Improv has been described as a series, as a highly refined system of observing, connecting, and responding to other people. I heard that quote and I was like, my God, that's coaching. Oh no, they're the same skill. That's why I like this so much. Oh, that's crazy. And in many ways they are the same skill. And so I posted that on LinkedIn and I wrote about like, I love seeing this moment because I'd had a few practice sessions at that point. And it was the same reason that I love teaching improv to beginning improvisers, because for some people they have this light bulb moment where it's like, I have permission to be silly and have fun. I'm like, right now, that's not only allowed, like that's expected of me. And that's awesome.
Yeah. Your exercises at P2Con were atrocious, by the way.
Oh, thank you, Chase. I appreciate that. I love forcing people to have fun in a group setting. It's just my jam. And so I'd had a few coaching practice sessions with people. And at the end, they were like, I feel totally better about this situation. Like, I'm going to go out and actually do a thing. Like, thank you. And I was like, oh my God, seriously? All we did was have a conversation. Shit, I'm gonna write about this. This feels really good. I like giving permission to feel joy. And a lot of us don't have that permission. Our jobs don't usually give it to us. I don't know, a lot of
We
don't give it to ourselves. We're not really incentivized to feel joy on our own. We don't have a culture that prizes that. We're incentivized to be successful, incentivized to make money, incentivized to buy a house and have kids and get a car. We're not necessarily incentivized to like have inner joy and feel good about yourself, you know?
Where's the money in that?
Yeah, exactly. Where's the money in that? So coaching gives me those moments that I get to give to other people. I'm like, I'm getting so much out of it. They think that they're getting the most out of it, but I'm on this other side of like, this is so fun. I love doing this. I make people cry. That feels great. It's good crying, I think, usually.
Yeah, not the type that Critter does to people.
I tell my clients I get coach bonus points when I make them cry. I forget what the question was at this point, but I'm going
to start
answering it.
Yeah, cool. It doesn't matter.
Is that a RoboCop mug?
Jace, I was hoping that one of you would notice this. Yes, it's called RoboCup.
Nice.
And I'm drinking RoboCup. drinking some Ginkgo biloba tea because I was going to pour a beer for this, and at the last minute I was like, no, I want to answer the questions intelligently, not fall asleep. So I went for the tea.
You could do both.
Well, I'll be having the beer immediately after this.
Gotcha. That would actually be pretty good podcast material if suddenly you were just like sleeping.
Just half awake answering riddles.
Critter, you keep saying, I'm going to turn this podcast around on you for a second. You keep saying that you need some coaching. What is
he definitely does.
What's going on in your life that you that
have you not with? Listened to any of these episodes?
Oh, yeah. So I was hoping that wouldn't come up. I've downloaded a bunch. And they're like, I have this big folder of podcast episodes of like random podcasts that I keep meaning to listen to. And every month or so, I'll remember and like put one on my phone and listen to it. And I'll go back to listening to podcasts that are either about The Simpsons or horror movies.
Nice. He labels our podcasts when he whines. I mean, there's like Critter whines about X, or in this episode, Critter's crying about Y.
Okay, so what's today's variable?
Yeah, what's today's variable?
All right, so let's see. Today's variable is, if this were a normal podcast and I had room to just whine about stuff, I would whine about not feeling useful. Because
come on, we've covered this one. So much.
Well, it's got a fresh take on it, though.
For the new listeners like me.
All right. You're not useful. The
tell
end.
Tell me about
this is my problem. I just talk to Jace too much, and he makes me feel horrible, and that's why I need a coach.
Yeah, you're just addicted to my terribleness.
First of all, Carter, you have permission to get better friends. Friends who build you up.
I've been telling you that for years.
I've never heard you say that one time. You told me I was stuck with you.
I've never said that.
And I thought it was the truth.
What is it that's making you not feel useful?
All right. So I've been thinking about this. I think it's that historically I've enjoyed. So it is strictly work related stuff, by the way. Personal life stuff is actually going really well right now.
Right.
So thanks, buddy. Sounds the peanut great. Gallery over here.
Are all your friends just out of frame?
Yeah, they're all over here pointing knives at me. Yeah, I mean, what are we talking about here? Why don't I feel? Oh, yeah, okay. So I feel like the things that I love doing are fixing broken teams and fixing bad process and like jumping into a team that's just kind of a mess and getting it running smoothly. And I didn't realize how much I needed that. So when I came to a product company, I've been working with the same team for a year. And after the first 6 months or so, things are pretty smooth. And now I just feel like, what am I doing here anymore? You know, I'm managing.
He's been wanting to quit.
That's
planning his exit.
So, okay, I won't actually give you a full on coaching experience live here in the moment, but I will say, I'll give you an example from the world of improv of another way you might think about this. How's that sound?
Let's do it.
Okay, so there's an improv exercise that we play, which is all about meeting an objective. You pull an objective out of a hat, and it might be, I want to travel through time, or the one that I got was, I want to fly. And you go, and in this exercise, you do a solo scene where it's just you for 5 minutes, basically, trying to figure out, like, okay, what's the closest I'm going to get to flying, right? And I stood up on a chair, and I jumped, and I stood up on something else, and, like, eventually I jumped off a table, and, like, I flew for a second. I was like, I did it. I'm done. And my improv coach was like, great. What's the next level? I was like, oh, shit. Okay. I want to hover, you know, like on the ceiling. I started like stacking up chairs on the table. He stopped me before I killed myself. But the underlying point there is when you're in an improv scene and you have, let's say you go in with an objective, because that's a great way to start a character when you don't know what to do. It's like, okay, I want something. Once you get that objective, it actually doesn't mean that the scene's over. It just means you've hit that first level. There is another objective above that one that stems from that same seed.
This sounds similar to like end of history illusion type of thinking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. We're not done. History is clearly not done with us.
Right.
But like Critter, your usefulness, I would argue,
was never there.
Which does not stem only from fixing broken things. So I would invite you to think about after this podcast, what is the higher level version of fixing something that's broken? What do you do when everything's fixed?
Fix yourself.
I find different stuff that's broken.
Yeah, what else might you do?
What else might I do? I don't know. That's what I do. I find stuff that's broken, and like, see, this is the way my mind was going. Is like, I need to find more broken stuff. You know, I need to hand this team off to someone that that wants a smoothly running team and wants to, you know, get into the code more than I do. And I need to go find. I want to like, I think a role that sounds really cool to me is like the firefighter. You know, I just jump around from team to team every 6 months based on which one's needed the most.
But do you know what firefighters do when they're not fighting fires?
They sit around.
They educate people on fire safety.
Okay.
And they build fire safety into structures.
So are you thinking teaching, training? Is that where this is going?
I'm just offering up another perspective.
See, that sounds terrifying.
Is coaching a pyramid scheme of like finding more people to coach? Is that it? Do you get a percentage if Critter turns into a coach and then like everybody that he coaches?
I'll tell you what's weird. What's weird is that I talked to my coach a lot about this. I was like, when we started, I was like, okay, so coaches tell everyone they should be a coach, right? She was like, no, right. Where did you get that idea? And then like 2 months in, she told me I should be a coach. I'm like, aha, I knew it.
Cut you.
And she said, I think I'm one of her only clients that she's ever told to be a coach. I might have that wrong, but like, no, I don't tell nearly anyone that I coach to be a coach. I think it's more, it's the kind of problem that you get with improv where like improvisers attract other improvisers. The kinds of people who tend to sign up for coaching are people who recognize the value of that work. And people who recognize the value of that work are often people who are capable of doing it in some fashion. Not exclusively.
Yeah, have some kind of untapped potential or something that they like have glimpsed.
A lot of people that come to improv end up coaching improv or teaching improv because
they just want to be in this that circle, right? That like
it's like a,
be
it's
around
a way
it.
To be in it, and they like exactly.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm
immerse
not
themselves.
Them to be,
that's what it
I'm,
is.
I'm not telling them to be a coach, but he did use this fireman metaphor, and
true.
The metaphors that we use are very revealing. Because they come immediately. It's not probably a metaphor that like you sat down and were like, what is my metaphor right now? Right? I'm assuming. Just kind of
right.
popped into your head.
Yeah, it just popped in.
So that is actually the result of your brain like marinating on it in the background for quite some time.
Or is he just ignorant to what firefighters do when they're not fighting fires?
I made that up too. Like, I think that's what they do.
You know, I went on a field trip with my kids to a fire. What do they call them? A firehouse? A fire station.
Yeah. Fire station?
Yeah, and they had a little course. Yeah, it was a house that was on fire, and they had a slide deck about what not to do.
Wait, do they have a fire safety course?
Yeah.
For real, though, I mean, like, at the actual firehouse, what were you actually trying to say?
We found a house that was on fire, and we pointed at it and said, don't do that. And that was the course. No, there was a...
shake their head.
It was like a Simpsons, like, haha. No, we went to a fire station, and there was like a fireman up there with a slide deck and everything. And he ran us through, you know, like, don't put pots on the edge of the stove with the handle hanging off because kids will grab those and dump boiling water all over themselves and just all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean,
it's actually a really good tip, by the way.
I would say that the next evolution for someone who's great at fixing things is building them to not be broken in the first place, you know? So here's another little coaching tip. That fireman thing is using a few different coaching skills at once here that I've learned about in coach training programs that I've been in. One is the power of metaphor. When someone's describing their situation to you and you're like, wow, it sounds like you're stuck in a hole and there's no ladder. And they go, yes, that's exactly it. That could be a really empowering moment for people because like you're putting into words something that's just been a horrible feeling that they've been carrying around. And somehow when you can envision it, when you can picture it as something else, I don't know. There's like a power there that lets you now change it.
That's like the whole business of self-help books and shit, right? And like why even Critter got addicted to it. He'd find like those little, I mean, even why I keep reading them. It's like you find people putting into words like a cluster of thoughts that I've had for a while. It's mostly like buzzwords essentially. And somebody's just like, oh, well, you know, here's all this research, like actual research that's been done. And conclusions and stuff. So it's actually, it could be these things kind of thing. Like, oh, shit, really?
It could be very liberating to learn that, like, oh, a lot of other people also feel this way. And
yeah.
Dealt with
yeah.
it, you know, in different ways in the past. So metaphor, I think, is a key coaching skill. There's also another one about perspectives. So I might ask you if we were in a coaching session, Mike, what would the fireman do in this situation? You've just put out the fire and you have to figure out what to do next.
See, I think, all right, so this gets to my problem, which is that I really, really need to feel useful, like the people like me and respect me and whatever. And I talk about that all the time. And I feel like that's very easy when you're fighting the fire because it's just very tangible. You know, like there was a fire there and I put that out and that's thanks to me.
You like to preen.
I like, no, it's bad. It's actually valuable work. Putting a fire out is not preening. That's like it's something on fire, dude.
You like to preen.
But if you're, I do like to preen, but that's a separate discussion. But then if you're training other people to prevent fires, then there's no way for you to tell if that was actually impactful, or at least it's much harder.
Unless there's a reduction in fires.
Yeah, I think like there's, if we're talking literal fires, yeah, like there's a pretty easy way to tell. I would posit that there are in fact ways to measure the impact of a successful training program. Also, I'm not saying necessarily that you should go be a trainer.
Or a firefighter.
But that is what came out of that metaphor for me. But this idea of like, can you look at this from another perspective? Other perspectives can be really, really powerful for looking at your problem. Like, look at it. All right, here's a freebie. Go home. You're home, probably. Write down,
we all are.
Write down like five or six hobbies that you have. Right, other things that you like.
Five or six?
Oh, dude, the real, when you work so with me, many. When we work with me, you get the real version, which is eight. Write down five or six.
Who has eight hobbies?
Just write. Well, they don't have to be hobbies. Things, other things, other roles maybe that you play, right? You're a parent.
Okay.
You're a podcaster.
Oh, okay.
You're a fireman. Put fireman on there. You know, you yeah. like to, I don't know, whatever you like. I don't listen to the show. I don't know what you do.
I'm but, sexy.
You're a very sexy individual.
Hey, at least we've never worked together for like most of a decade either. So, yeah.
Which one of you is Critter? And then, take a minute and write down for yourself. Okay, I'm looking at this career moment that I'm feeling kind of stuck in, right? Like I'm not feeling useful anymore. What is the parent's perspective on this? If I were going to look at this through the lens of a parent, what might the parent do next?
Like, well, does it have to be like from what I would think my parent would think?
No.
Okay.
This like a, is like him as a parent. So you're trying on other perspectives from your life.
So it would be like Critter as a parent.
Exactly.
Like the scariest version of Critter.
Yeah, look at this problem through my parent eyes. Instead of my regular eyes.
Exactly.
I like
all
that.
Those other perspectives are in there, but we, again, it comes back for me. I use the permission metaphor a lot. I feel like we like lock them away. And we're like, well, that's parent brain. I don't bring that to work. I don't have permission to use that here. And yet I have definitely had to approach clients at times in a not, let's see, how do I word this?
Politics. Because they're giant babies.
Well, here's what I'll say is that it can be very helpful for young children to give them, when they don't know what to do next and they're kind of spinning out about it, to give them some clear options.
Or some candy. Just
and that, well, always give them candy. Give me some candy. But like that concept applies to grownups too. Sometimes we just need to be presented with some yeah. clear options instead of saying, well, what do you want to do? Because yeah. what she wants to do, I don't know, my daughter probably wants to play Legos for another 2 hours. But what I wanted her to do is put shoes on. So if I'm like, do you want the red shoes or the green shoes? Okay, now we can work with the work. Like any answer works for me. See what I'm saying?
Other yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, can yeah. be powerful.
Have you ever been coaching someone and you're just like stumped? Like, you know, they say something, you just have no idea how to yeah. respond.
Yeah, totally. So I used this metaphor before when I was like, you know, I might listen to someone's description and say, like, sounds like you're in a hole. So I got that from my coach. When I started practicing on people, I came to her and I was like, so I had a session with this person and they were telling me about this problem and that problem and this other problem. And Sabrina, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. Like, this person has all these problems. And I can't solve them. And at this point, I was newer to it. And I'm still very much in my day job mindset of being a consultant, where it's my job to show up with answers. And what she said is, she goes, you know what a coach should do when they see that their client is in a hole? I said, give them a ladder. She goes, no. You say, it sounds like you're in a hole. Like, literally, which kind of sounds like it would be useless. And yet, as I've gotten more and more used to it, the power of not answering the problem for someone is massively empowering, because really my role there, I mean, think of like a sports coach. I'm not going to get out there in the field and play a game, but I'm going to help you develop the muscles that you need to play the game at your best. You know, so telling you, like, it sounds like you are really in a tough position. What would serve you to get out of this? What would a better position look like? Like, that's my power, is I bring powerful questions to the table, but I don't bring a lot of answers. By design, and also because I don't have them. I'm not in someone else's head. I don't know what the right move is for them.
How much of the typical session is them talking versus you talking, you think?
Ooh. In a good session, they're doing most of the talking. Probably like 80-20 maybe. I have times when I get excited and I start running off at the mouth a little bit. I'm working on that. I mean, I'm still new as a coach, so I'm still learning, like, where do I have the most work to do, and like kind of where are my danger zones. But I do also have times where someone will ask me something about, because I work with people on career transitions a lot, and I've been in the working world for a long time, and they'll be like, well, yeah, I wanted to say such and such in my resume, but you know, the hiring manager, blah, blah, blah. And I'll say, hey, can I take my coach hat off for a minute and put on my giving advice hat? And I ask permission for that. And I will literally like put my hand on my head, take off my invisible coach hat, put on my guidance hat, and be like, okay, here's what I would do. Say this, here's what you should put in this headline, like describe your work, you know, in this way, frame it in such and such a way, like reach out, have a conversation with this person. Okay, coach hat back on. How does all that feel? That kind of thing. So there are times when I will talk more intentionally, but I kind of have to ask permission for it.
Do people mostly need help with or want to talk about work stuff or personal stuff or kind of all the above?
So far, most of my client, again, from my tiny client base has been people talking about work stuff for the most part. A few other things, you know, creep in because spoiler alert, it's all connected. But work tends to be what brings people to me. I mean, especially right now, you know, the great resignation.
Right.
It's not over. It's not going away, I don't think, anytime soon. And a lot of people who have maybe felt for a while like, oh, I should finally change jobs. They finally hit that point of like, fuck it, I'm going to do it. Huh, now what? So that's what tends to bring people to me. In coach training, though, we talk about coaching the person and not the problem. So I'm not really, so you might be coming to me with a work problem, but all my questions are going to be about you, not really about your job. You know, I need to know just enough context to understand like what your situation is. But again, it's about helping you kind of grow the muscles that you will need to go and like make the best choice for yourself after this. I'm not there. The word coach gets used, I think, to mean a lot of things. There are quote unquote career coaches who will polish your resume, help you write cover letters, like help you do industry research, or they bring to the table a big Rolodex, you know, of people. And they're like, well, here, now you have access to my network. I don't have a network anybody would want access to. I mean, I know you guys, so it's kind of cool. But yeah, so I don't really bring that aspect to the table as opposed to helping people get clear on like, what do they really want to do? And then what are steps they can take to go do it?
And holding them accountable.
Holding them accountable. I used this word before. It's my favorite South Park word. The accountability buddy.
Yeah.
Where like, I'm doing it. I'm doing it in a friendly way. But if we didn't, you know, do a thing and you said you were going to do it, like we will talk about it. Or I might even text you that day and be like, hey, you were going to send this email. How'd it go? Oh, I didn't send it. Okay. When do you want to send it? Like the most dangerous thing you can do when you are being coached is say like, yeah, I think I'd like to do X. Cause the coach's next question will be great. When do you want to do it?
Exactly.
Let's put it on the calendar right now. But that's great.
I hate that shit.
I know. I hate it too. When someone does it to me and it's the most useful goddamn thing in the world for me. And I love doing it to my clients.
I've never had to do that yet, but definitely people being like, hey, you should just fucking do that. Like, no.
Uh-huh. That aspect of it sounds awesome to me because I actually pay for, I think I've talked to Jace about this, I pay for a service, bossasaservice.life. It's like $25 a month and they just, it's an actual person. Her name is Anusha. And I send her like my to-do list on Telegram, the chat app, and then next day she like checks in to see did I actually do them. And so it's like a very minimal version of what you're talking about, but it doesn't really work because like it's, I don't know this person, you know, I've never seen her face.
I didn't
like
know that
text
you
on
paid
a screen.
For a service for
wait,
this.
You're,
it's so
you're
dumb.
Paying for like a calendar reminder to pop up and say, hey,
yeah.
Did you do this?
No, because,
thing?
But it's an actual an person. So it's slightly more
idiot,
slightly more impactful than a calendar reminder because she will, she'll give you like encouragement and she'll say like, let's get it done today and stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
So it, you know, it's semi-helpful, but like it would be way better if it was actually a person that I knew and, you know, like felt some level of responsibility for.
So it's not a calendar reminder, it's just a bot.
So Critter, when do you want to schedule your complimentary session?
Oh no, it's happening.
Sounds
he
like
did it.
You're ready,
he did
buddy.
The thing.
I did the thing.
He was in as soon as you mentioned the free hour.
You know
he's like, I'm in.
I'm technically still answering your question of how did I get my first client, which I will now come back to, which is I put that quote on LinkedIn and this friend that we hadn't seen in many years reached out and said she wanted to make a career change. She didn't really know what to do next. She was feeling kind of stuck and would I talk to her? And I said, yes. And we had that first conversation and it was a fit. And that's the thing. It's not just, oh, do they like me as a coach? It also has to be like, is this a person that I can really work with, you know, as their coach? Mm-hmm. And I don't know quite how to put into words yet, like what it is that makes that chemistry work. But I've done enough of them now of these kind of intro sessions that I can start to tell in like the first 5 minutes, not if they're going to hire me, but is this a person that I could work with? And it's really weird because I don't know why. But yeah, 5 minutes in, and I've had conversations with people where they're like, "Yeah, no, I knew like pretty much instantly when we started talking, this was going to work out."
What does it look like for it to be a person that you don't feel like you can work with? What does that mean?
Well, there's kind of two categories of that. One is I don't feel that like chemistry connection, the thing I can't quite put my finger on.
You don't get the butterflies.
Don't get the butterflies. The conversation just doesn't flow easily, you know. But there's another category of people that aren't quite right for me to work with, which is people who aren't really willing, people who want things to change, but they are not willing to change.
They want results.
Yeah, that's where I was for years. The work. I wanted results without doing a damn thing.
Yeah.
And it sucked because I did nothing and nothing changed. I've tried nothing and I'm all out of ideas.
I'm not going to add any new process, but give me all the damn results.
Right? Because doesn't that sound nice? It sounds of great course. To me. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
Let's just wish it into existence. Fuck it, right?
I mean, there's a quote. I love the quote that, you know, everybody wants to change the world, but nobody wants to change.
Right.
And so, yeah. So, like, I've definitely had conversations with people who are like, I want this, I want this, I want this. Cool. Like, what's a step that you want to take here? Well, you know, I don't really want to take any steps. Or like, oh, I can't take a step.
You mean I have to participate in my own life?
Right. And I can give you verbal permission to take a step, but you're the one who has to believe it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
How often is it a once a month, once a week, bi-weekly?
What, that I'm doing these intro sessions?
No, well, no, if, no. If you're with coaching average, someone.
Yeah, how often do you meet
with
them?
Oh, like if I'm working with someone, we'll meet once a week on average.
For an hour, half hour?
For an hour. And I work in a 3 month, basically you sign a contract with me for 3 months. That's my current model. It works for some people. It doesn't. Other people are not ready for that level, I think, of commitment. I think that's a good amount of time to actually make some changes. I worked with my coach for a 90
days
commitment. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just doing, I don't know. I'm playing around with the idea of like, should I offer like just a one, you know, like, hey, here's a 45 minute, like quick hit tactical session, that kind of thing. Maybe for people who aren't ready to commit, you can change something in 40 minutes. You can change something. I've had coaching practice sessions where we've like unlocked stuff in 20 minutes. You can do it, but I'm more interested in seeing kind of lasting change. And for that, I think it takes some time to build up.
You have kids, right?
I do. I have a kid, but it feels like two or three.
how old's your kid? Tell me some details.
I have a daughter. She is 9 years old. She's in third grade. I always get this wrong. Third grade. She is what's the word? Feisty. She is a lovely mix. She's a lovely mix of both great things and like mental health challenges between my wife and myself. It's crazy to see like all cocktail. Yeah, man. Talking about the power of reflection, a kid is a great way to just see all your shit reflected right back at you, but like at full volume, and it's also running at the same time, and it's 3 years old.
And it's always hungry.
It's always hungry. Always, yeah, she gets hungry. That from me, I think. Much like me, my daughter doesn't know when she's hungry or when she's full, so she gets food-related mood swings throughout the day, just like I do. So that's fun. But it's been helpful, too. Like, she has ADHD. I have ADHD. Growing up, it wasn't a time when I would just go around telling people like, yeah, I have ADHD. Like it was it was kind of a shameful, like I would get made fun of for it. I was called a spaz and hyper and all that stuff. And I mean, I was those things, but don't call
you
me.
You still are.
It's fucked up. Yeah, of course. But yeah. Now it's like, now I've learned how to monetize it.
Exactly. That's the point, right?
Yeah.
That's your superpower.
That's what I love about it. Whereas my daughter, and I'm psyched that she's growing up in a time like this, like she'll meet new people and be like, hi, I'm Allie, I have ADHD, I'm super smart, I like this, I'm good at math, but I don't like doing it, I like art, blah blah blah. Like she talks to strangers in a way I'd never. If I'm in line at the coffee shop, the conversation is going to be between me and whatever, not this podcast I'm listening to at that time. Whereas when she is out in the world, she is just constantly introducing herself to people and like leaving the park with five new friends, and it's mind-boggling to me. So I guess
I'm so jealous of that.
Really? Do you like meeting people?
No. I wish that I could easily introduce myself to people and just like make friends and stuff. Like I'm definitely like, yeah, you know, the person that just avoids all contact as much as I can.
Yeah, exactly. I've gone to giant conferences and it's like, okay, everybody, networking hour. And I'm like, cool, I'm going to head to the bathroom for 20 minutes till this blows over.
Yeah. My favorite move is to go introduce myself, give a good handshake, eye contact, and then have no small talk. Just, yeah, I don't want to be here either. Kind of attitude about it, right? Like, just like, I did the thing. I did what I was supposed to.
I'll tell you a good tip. If you're stuck in that situation, excuse me, just ask a lot of questions.
Nope. I'm just not interested. That's the problem, right? Is like I go into those situations. In the past, I've gotten into those situations where I'm just like, I'm not fucking interested at all. But I have to look like I'm doing something, so I'm just gonna be like, "Hey, how's it going? Yep. Uh huh. What was your name? All right. See ya."
Kurt, you have kids, right?
I do have kids. Yeah. First of all, you have to realize that Jace is a sociopath. We covered this in a previous episode.
Oh, okay. I will listen to that one.
It all makes sense now.
I mean, I have met him before.
So it should be obvious to you.
Yeah, I know what's up. I know what I'm getting.
Yeah, I've got four kids, and that was actually
four
why I asked.
Four kids? Holy four, shit. Yeah.
And he's younger than us.
Wait, could I do a second take of that? Four kids, cool, man. Yeah. Sounds great.
We'll splice that in. Yeah, I can't believe you didn't know that. That was like the running joke at phase two. It was like I had 13 kids and, you know, had a new one every week and stuff. But that was why I asked was that the whole side hustle thing when you have a kid seems really tough.
So I do it on, like, she goes to bed at 8:30. So like one or two nights a week, my wife will cover like the last half hour of bedtime for me, and I'll do a session from like 8 to 9. Or I'll do like an hour on Sunday afternoon or Saturday afternoon or something. I keep a pretty low client load. One, because I only have a few clients. And then two, like I think, you know, three, maybe four at a time is probably the max I can handle right now with a full-time job and a spirited child. But it's enough right now to keep me very energized from it, which is cool. And it's enough to keep, like, if I can get one more client this year, that will be another sort of meaningless but meaningful to me milestone of like, okay,
nudge like, wink wink, Critter.
No, but I mean, it's I need a lot of external proof points when I'm trying something new, and this is something I talked to my coach about, because I have a hard time kind of like validating my own ideas. Mm-hmm. But if someone externally is like, yeah, that's a good idea, I'm like, oh, it is a good idea, I should do that. So like, you know, when the third person wanted to pay me for this, I was like, oh my god, I think I'm finally ready to start saying, like, I am a coach.
It's happening.
Well, even being able to say I'm a coach instead of, oh, yeah, I'm doing a little coaching.
Yeah, it's kind of the thing that Cartier talked about when he was on, where he introduced himself as an author. And he was just like, yeah, at some point, you just have to fucking introduce yourself that way, because he didn't drop the F-bomb. But, you know.
But I will, because I was at a fucking rock show a few weeks back, and I met a friend of a friend. And I'm getting introduced to this woman, and she goes, oh, what do you do? And I like paused for a second in the headlights, and I was like, I'm a coach. Well, I have this day job, but also I do coaching. And I did a coaching session with her, and it was really fun.
Nice.
What do people say when they ask what type of coach? What do you say when people ask what type of coach?
Yeah, that's, I would love for people to say that. Instead, what people usually say is either, if it's someone who hasn't sought me out, right, and I'm just like introducing myself that way. I've had a couple friends who kind of laughed at me and then paused for a second. They were like, wait, are you serious? So there's like, that's one reaction. I've had a few people say like, oh yeah, that makes perfect sense from my interactions with you. Like, I'm surprised you weren't already doing this, which always feels good. But if people say what kind of coach, I say life and career coach. The phrase life coach.
Yeah, it's tainted,
yeah, I don't
isn't
know,
it?
Man. It's yeah, distasteful. I was wondering. I don't know
or
what
it has
it is.
Been for a while. Yeah.
That's the one that takes me back to the like, oh, we're going to light some sage and, you know, do some incantations. And I know some coaches who light sage and do incantations, and they're actually good coaches. They just also bring this stuff to it.
Right.
But that's not me. For a while, I was playing around with some branding before I settled on the very creative Jordan Hirsch coaching. but I was playing with the name of the Reluctant Coach. So I was like, well, maybe my market is other people who are reluctant about this. I finally realized it's really hard to market to people who don't want your service explicitly.
Yeah,
I
feel like that's bad for that, but it'd be like a good podcast or something for you.
Yeah, ooh, the Reluctant Coach. I like that. That's what you should call this episode. Because I was reluctant.
All right. I'm writing it down.
You should. I think it's pretty good. I was super reluctant, because you hear that phrase life coach. I mean, what do you picture?
Yeah,
somebody I'm not going to talk to.
exactly.
Yeah, like a ponytail, and yeah, just that whole vibe about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always get like a scammy kind of vibe from them. Like they're trying to like pull one over on me type of thing. that's usually what I get from like that, because they seem a little more sleazy, honestly, from the ones that I've met in the past and stuff. Because I've known, like through friends and stuff that have had life coaches, or mm-hmm. like, you know, good and bad stories, of course, but it's all hearsay as well. And,
yeah. You know. Plus, so like, I mean, you can get accredited as a coach, and I'm on my path to professional accreditation. I'm hoping to get it next year. But anybody can just call themselves a coach.
Right.
Like if you call yourself a doctor, someone will eventually stop you. But if you call yourself a coach, like, who cares?
Right.
So, you know, your mileage may really vary. But also when you hear the phrase, or at least when I hear career coach, that's when I'm assuming like, okay, you're going to polish my resume. You're going to give me access to a network. Like, I don't know. So I'm still kind of figuring out like, what do I do? I don't know. I settled up for now and I help people get unstuck.
You're a permission coach.
Ooh, that's good.
Is it?
I don't know. It sounds good. Got an authentic response. That's something.
I think that minimizes it. I do think that's a big part of it, though. I realized recently that I have a big habit of going to my boss to ask for feedback about an idea, but really it's not feedback I'm after. It's just I want him to say, okay, go do it. You know, I just want him to give me permission. And because I know that like that's not a good thing to do, is to always want permission. So my brain had said, well, it's just feedback. So it's like a reasonable thing to go talk to him about.
Well, so that type of thing I do as well, but it's not necessarily for the feedback or even the permission to go do something. It's so that there's a paper trail. So I'm not like off doing something on my, I mean, especially in my new job, I have more autonomy than I did in previous jobs. So like, I don't want to just be off gone for like 2 days doing something without anybody knowing what I'm doing.
Just, so it's what kind of like disappearances? First of all, how is your new job?
It's great.
Cool. Okay. Brief answer.
Nobody bothers them.
Second of all,
total autonomy and everything's
Going. Yeah, I was going to say, like, how often are you like, hey, I need to disappear off the grid for 3 days, but don't worry, it's for work?
Never. I mean, I'm around day to day, and I reach out and talk to like my boss and stuff for guidance. Okay. And I mean, I'm still learning some of the systems and whatnot. So I don't have like, they're not giving me a giant thing just yet that I could kind of do that and hide in the cave and be like, I'll have it in like 6 days. Don't worry.
Well, that's cool. Autonomy is nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And no time tracking. That's super fun.
God, sounds wonderful.
It's the first time in my career. So,
but yeah, I mean, in this new role that I'm in at phase two, I am doing
like
a lot of
brand new, isn't it?
It is like a couple weeks old. Yeah. Okay, well, yeah. It's brand new and it's been something I've been kind of pushing for like 6 years.
What's your title now?
My title is the director of training and facilitation.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. Right.
Super fancy.
It's cool. I think it might, if anyone from work is listening, tune out for a minute. It might be that perfect job I've been aiming for, where at any given time, no one really knows what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
<It's kind> of amazing. As long as they no longer call you the mascot, right? That's
Wait,
right.
Other people, how many people call me this? I thought it was just
I'm just usually just around handful. In conversations that shit gets said, and then I like to just drag it.
That mascot thing was painful for me because
mascots, oh, I bet.
But like mascots are, they get people energized.
They're essential.
Everybody loves it. Right. They're actually like really important to team cohesion and to like energy and that sort of thing. And they're not exactly respected.
Mm-mm.
So my hope with this role is I'm kind of taking that mascot energy and channeling it into like really visibly useful activities.
You're going to validate it,
which is cool. I do find myself kind of hungry for permission. Sometimes I'm still figuring out, you know, again, it's been a few weeks, but I'm like, oh, can I just like go to people and tell them this thing? I guess, I don't know. I'll try it and see what happens.
That's another good throwback to the Cartier conversation, because he was talking about I read this book on his recommendation called Perfume, which is the weirdest book ever. It's about a kid who has an insanely amazing sense of smell and is able to create perfumes that like drive people crazy because they smell so good. I can't even explain how weird it is. But he said that reading that was when he realized like, oh, you can do anything as an author. Like you can make up the weirdest crap ever. And that's okay. Like you have permission to do that.
How interesting.
So, I mean, look at you. Sorry, yeah, you can do whatever you want.
I have a timer going off here because my sourdough is ready to be put into the fridge.
You better take care of that, man.
I hit stop. Why is it still beeping at me?
What is that? Okay, oh, there's another one.
Still what's happening? Stop.
How many timers did you set, man?
Jesus. We're not going to, but yes, we could.
Your sourdough's already gone.
It's coming at me from all sides. But yes, I love that idea of like, well, this guy wrote an absolutely batshit crazy book, so I guess I can too.
Yeah.
You know, that is very cool. And that, yeah, like I definitely have this theme of like needing external validation of like, well, someone called me a coach. I guess I can call myself that. Like, do I have permission? And the fact that I long for permission reminds me of this quote from, I think it's Eve Ensler, who wrote The Vagina Monologues, who has this great quote about how we teach what we most want to learn and we give what we most want to get. And whether or not she actually said it, I love that quote. Because very often, like, I am coaching people to help them unlock the moments that I want to have unlocked for me. You know, I want permission to feel joy. And I feel like I have it now for the first time in a long time, but it wasn't easy to get to.
Did you being coached by someone lead in any way to this new role?
Oh, God, very much so. Yeah. Because I came to her with the question of, like, what should I do next? And in conversations with her and in conversations with my wife, who's just an excellent sounding board, you know, I was thinking it had to mean leaving because I've been there for 8 years. I've changed roles maybe every 2 years there. And I was kind of due for another one, but I really didn't like it. I didn't see one on the horizon. But I wasn't crazy about the work that I was being asked to do. And I felt like I was getting to do some of this training and facilitation and even coaching work, but it was all on the side. And so my wife asked me a good question of like, well, if you were going to stay there, what would your dream job be inside phase two? And I started writing it, and it has now more or less turned into this role. But my coach helped me find, I guess, the confidence to go out and like push for it. Cause I also have a bad habit of like half asking for things and then I'll kind of get a half yes as an answer and I'll take it and be like, okay, well, I guess this didn't work out. I'll see you in 2 years.
Yeah, I relate to that really hard. Yeah. And this is very relevant for me because now I'm thinking like, do I need to try and do something like this to be more in line with the role that I want? Like, did you just come up with a job description and pitch it and, you know, get it pushed through?
It's the various times I've pitched a version of this role, I guess I won't go through all of them, but in its latest iteration, I did like a soft pitch of a role that was kind of like this. It actually had more of a coaching focus. But phase two wasn't as interested in like that being as big a part of the role as I was. But the training and facilitation work was really interesting to them. I was like, oh, that's interesting. Maybe I could focus there. So I kept sort of writing a job description on my own, and I would bring it up and be like, hey, should we put a job description on this? And the answer was like, no, for now, like, let's keep it kind of an informal thing. Like, you're going to, you know, work part time on some of these projects. You'll still be doing client work. And then I don't know. A few things changed. I think I started getting probably a little more confident just because of my coaching work, like getting hired, knowing that I could do something else outside of the job where I'd been for 8 years made me more confident at my day job. That paired with I'm on this team that spearheaded this meetings initiative at phase two, where we've like taken a real hard swing at trying to kind of revamp and repair our meetings culture. And I think I got a lot of visibility doing that work. And I think as a result of some of those things and like kind of a new way that I was sort of carrying myself and like bringing some, and again, this wasn't something anybody told me to do. This was just like, I'm working with this group of people and we all feel like this problem's bothering us and it sounds like it's bothering everybody. So I don't know, let's try to fix it. So I think when those things happened organically, phase two leadership was like, hey, do you want to talk about turning this thing you've been shopping around into a formal role? I said, hell yeah, I do. I've got a job description ready to go. You want to see it? so it went through some rounds of edits, but it ended up being like pretty close to my original vision for it. And that is
it's got to feel good.
Oh my God, it feels amazing paired with a healthy dose of like, oh fuck, what do I do now?
Right.
Yeah, of course.
I caught the tiger.
Kind of what you're talking about. Yeah.
Now I'm holding a tiger. Okay. Let's see where this goes.
All right.
Yeah,
so
feel good. Yeah.
Here at the end, is there any? I mean, I'm down for however long you want to talk. Critter's the one that's all.
I'm not. It's the weekend.
Maybe. Yeah,
I promise. But shut up. Trip to the playground.
But
yes.
Would you like to taunt Adam because we continuously want to taunt
Adam Mitchell?
Yeah, to get him on the podcast.
I would like to taunt him by saying that I got on here first because I'm a better person. Can I say
big burn?
Right? You can. You just did.
Well, here's some ways I'm better cement than Adam. Adam has a calendar full of unaccepted meeting invitations. So when you try to schedule with him, you see all these meetings and you don't know if he's going to or not.
I do that too.
Yeah. Well, Jason,
you don't have meetings anymore. Shut up.
Well, not anymore. You're right. Yeah.
Okay. I will say this instead of Adam. Adam is actually a fantastic creative collaborator, and he and I have written some songs together over the past
year.
I know. And it's really fun. And you should have Adam to talk about pursuing creativity.
You know, you should help us get Adam to get on here to talk.
You have no idea the amount of struggling that's gone into trying to get Adam on the stupid podcast.
It's been months.
Not that hard to schedule, man. It's not like he's doing stuff. He just doesn't write back. He never writes back. He'll write back 2 hours later and be like, hey, yeah, no, I can't make it. It's like, yeah, that was 2 hours ago. I figured. So, do you want me to, listen, just text me. I will get it to him.
Hand deliver it
to him. I will hand deliver it to him.
Send it via Dove.
He also will often promise to like send people 3D printed stuff. And then like a year will go by and he'll be like, I'm still working on it. So, you know, that's just Adam being Adam.
All right. Well, if you could send me any of those songs that I could hold hostage and maybe we could get them on that way.
I don't know.
But those songs are actually decent. I've heard them both. I actually have both of them.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Or I have two of them. I don't know how many.
Okay, there's more than two at this point. But keep the positive feedback coming because I really can't get enough of that. So
except for like the vocals. The vocals are really terrible. Oh, okay. Like the guitar was awesome.
Yeah, the guitar's pretty good, and then that guy starts singing. It's like,
it's just like, what the fuck? Yeah.
But I think Adam would be a great guest to talk about creative pursuits because he brings a real interesting perspective to how he keeps track of all of his creative ideas.
He has a really interesting perspective on just about everything.
Yeah, he's a good dude.
It's always like one off of what you think it's going to be.
Is this a new strategy where we flatter him to try and get him on the podcast? We haven't tried that one yet.
That guy.
And you want a talkative guest, right? Like he makes me look quiet and reserved.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those people that we just need to throw him a good topic and then...
You know, just throw him anything.
The podcast.
Yeah. Hey, Adam, what's up? Yeah. 2 hours later. Okay, man, we got to go.
Yeah, you have no idea the number of times. Like, I'd be like, all right, I got to go. I got another call. And he's like, real quick. And then like 30 minutes later, he's still...
Critter, I have a real good idea.
The running joke when we were at Phase 2 is that it'd be like, oh, could you help me check this out real quick? Like, I'd send him a link to a hangout. And then like 4 hours would go by. And we're just talking about music and just random shit. And he's like passing YouTube videos back and forth. And just like, what the fuck? I got to make up all this time now.
Easy to talk. That's his superpower.
Yeah, it really is.
Cool. On that note, I will say thank you both so much for having me on. This has been really fun.
That was super fun. Yeah, thanks for coming, man.
Yeah.
If you do a bunch of, you know, coaching sessions with Critter and you want to make fun of him after the, you know, 90 days, you could come on after the 90 days and just fucking
berate him. Cool.
Yeah. We'll not during. You got to set him up and establish trust. And then we can just poke and laugh at his whole entire process together.
That sounds good.
Oh, here's the question before you leave. If we do our coaching publicly on the podcast, is that going to cost me more or less?
Okay. For real talk, if you actually were to work with me and you wanted to do a session live on the podcast, I would be happy to do it, but Jace can't come.
Sweet.
Jace is like, let's work for me,
I'm too disruptive, yeah. There's no way you're getting what you need done with me here. Because
it needs to be a very safe space.
A genuine thing, yeah.
No judgment. Like, it's weird to call it a safe space and be like, yeah, but I mean, then you send it out to the public to go listen to, but like, in the moment.
But the actual session has to be genuine and like sincere, yeah.
So... Cool.
And even if I just sat here, there's just no way on mute that you guys still wouldn't get disrupted. Yeah,
just your very presence, Jason.
And look at your stupid face and just shut down.
Exactly.
It's great to see both of your stupid faces.
You too, buddy. Back at you.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Weekend time.
Cool. There you all right. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Bye.
Let me know when this comes out since I'm not subscribed. Bye.
Bye.